Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Whether you're nearing retirement, entering the workforce for the first time, or caught somewhere in the confusing muddle in the middle, you're likely sensing it and you're probably living it. We know we are, and we want to know why. Listen in as we interview experts and everyday people like you to find out how best to navigate the ever-growing weirdness of work in the modern age.
So welcome to today's episode of Work is Weird Now, and today's guest is Mark Haywood. So I was introduced to Mark via a friend. As I've mentioned before, we've on this podcasting life journey, I've been chatting over lunches and in soft plays on farms with friends and family with the kids, and was introduced to Mark by a mutual connection who said, you just need to speak to Mark. He's basically been on a very similar journey to you and has got lots of wealth of experience. Not sure which way it's going to go, but just have the chat. And it's safe to say, ever since we had our first discovery call a couple of weeks ago, my brain has exploded with a gazillion ideas and also just gained so much knowledge from Mark. So we're eternally grateful for that and really excited for this conversation to learn a lot about his personal journey. So welcome, Mark.
Thank you very much for having me.
Pleasure. So we start every episode of Work is Weird Now with our weird work moments of the week. Alice, what is yours?
So I've been reflecting a little bit on the topic of this episode, which is very much around freelancing. And, you know, I've been doing this so long. I've been out on my own for so long, almost 15 years now, that I think I forget. I always say I'm undomesticated. I've actually forgotten what it's like to work within an organization. But it has become very clear to me that the pace of things and the speed and the degree to which you need to be a really effective communicator and sell yourself and your ideas constantly is something that I think exists very much in this realm, and I've actually felt somewhat validated by the fact that I've clearly developed some skills over the course of the last 15 years. So yeah, how about you, Dan?
So I've had a very high pressured week, just lots of deadlines, lots of things, you know, coming to a certain point. And I'm not going to lie, I've cried on Teams to people I've never met in my life and potentially may never meet in my life, because we are in a, you know, a virtual global environment working with people in different spaces. Mark, what is yours?
I've been reflecting on something that's huge in the news at the moment. In 2020, when I first started the Behind the Spine podcast, we sat down and thought, who would we want on? Who's the most outrageous name that we could get? And I jokingly said the Pope. And we didn't get the Pope, obviously, because he's rather busy. But we did get the next best thing, which was Cardinal Vincent Nicholls, who's the Archbishop of Westminster. And I was reflecting this week on the fact that, you know, imagine if he went to conclave. He was always an outside chance, but imagine reflecting on that 5 years later, that we did actually get the Pope. How fun it would have been to sort of use that to promote the podcast, to say, come on Behind the Spine and look where you could end up. You know, it's just, it's ridiculous to me. And it just sort of proves that, you know, with the right messaging, with the right approach, with the right following wind and bit of luck, you know, the world of work becomes so weird because it opens up so many possibilities and conversations that you would never normally have.
It's a bit of luck, a lot of effort and thought and strategy going around these things, and it opens doors that maybe you didn't realize were even there, which I think is just phenomenal. So the second question that we always ask our guests is, are you where you thought you'd be in your career right now?
The honest answer is hell no. A number of years ago, I was asked to go back to my old sixth form college in Manchester. And I said, sure, what do you want me to talk to them about? They said, well, you come and talk to the A-level students. And I was like, sure. And they said, what do you want me to say? And they said, could you touch on why it's okay if you don't know what to do with the rest of your life? And I was like, yeah, yes, I can 100% talk at length about that. I don't know whether I've ever known which direction my career would take me in. I don't even know whether I'd call it a career or a, you know, a collection of roles that I tried to do my best in that have ended up with me being here where I am. And there's joy in that. There's obviously anxiety and trepidation, and, you know, you could always use more money and more certainty and all of those things. But you know, one of the joys of this sort of existence is that you get to do things like this. You get to take time to speak about, you know, your life, and you reflect on it, and you try and make sense of it as best you can. I'm about to turn 50, so I've been doing a lot of, you know, kind of reflection on things like that. All of a sudden, my age will start with a different number. That's always a big moment, isn't it? You know, I do believe that you kind of rent your life, and you try and do the best with it. You try and do the best with what you've got. And the reason I mentioned the story of going back to school is because, you know, one of the things I said to these kids was the questions never end. When you go to university, if that's what you choose to do, the questions will all be about what A-levels did you do? And then when you leave, it's all about what degree did you do? Are you going to do a master's? Are you going to do a PhD? Are you going to get married? Are you going to buy a house? Are you going to have kids? Are you going to have another kid? You know, it never ends. You know, this projection from other people onto you as to how you should live your life is kind of suffocating at times. And I sort of try and step back from that and do something different that's authentic. And often, you know, people get very suspicious of things like that, don't they? People like us doing what we do, we don't fit into conventional boxes. And my wife and I don't have children. And that's always been a subject for debate by others. And I'm like, I've often wondered whether, as long as we all agree that having kids and having a conventional job is the done thing, then everyone is complicit in this, that's how it's done. And so we've tried to do it differently, and I've tried to do it differently. And yeah, I screw it up every single day. I've said many times, the only thing I'm an expert in is being me. And I get that wrong every day. But at least it's me being authentic.
I definitely want to ask more detail about your career path then, and what's happened. But I want to ask you a question first. That it sounds weird that you don't have a fear of failure. Is that like a mantra or a mindset that you've had your whole life?
I think so. I've been very fortunate in that many things have gone well for me, and I've played a small part in that. I work in the arts, and I also work in the corporate world. And I think writing and being an entrepreneur is very, very similar. It is a repeated daily exercise in failing better than you failed yesterday. And you cannot live this life without failure. The chances of me making it as a successful filmmaker, which is what I would dearly love to be, are so small as if to be laughable. And yet, if I don't try it, it definitely won't happen. But if I do, there's a small chance it might. In this life, you have to take risks because, you know, you guys know, you know, if you're reliant on one client for income, well, that client could walk at any moment. You have to have so many projects on the go. You have to have so many different things trying to land, because otherwise, you know, you're just sat there and it is crashing nowhere around you. And if they all come off at the same time, well, that's a really happy position to be in, but they don't. I'll share something that's really important to me. When I was 14, my dad lost his job, and this was January 89, when interest rates were 15%. And he had always said, it's just a job. It's fine. I'll get another one. And I know that back then, you know, you get laid off every day. This, you know, these days it's a completely different world. But back then, in the late 90s, we'd just moved house, mortgaged up to the hilt, and losing his job deeply impacted him. Deeply. And I realized at the time that it wasn't just a job. It almost defined him. And I kind of went, I remember having this weird out of body experience thinking, I don't want that to happen to anyone, least of all me. I remember thinking, you've just got to go for it. Whatever it is, you know, you've just got to go for it. So failure is, bizarrely, a daily occurrence in my life, whether it be a script getting rejected, whether it be a client pitch getting rejected, whether it be a client walking away or saying, look, we can't pay you, we're going to have to push back. It's a daily exercise in failing. And I'm all right with that. You know, maybe it's just a subtle reframing. Maybe it's the mindset. Maybe it's a cognitive shift in what failure actually.
Yeah,
I think right now when we're seeing work fracture, you know, is certainty a myth? And actually, in many ways, you can gain more of that certainty when you have agency over what happens in your own career.
Yes, absolutely, Alice. And I think there's two things that have probably fast-tracked us to this quicker than we would have gotten there if we were to follow normal evolutionary speeds in terms of business and commerce and how it moves. The first was everyone pivoted to working remotely during the pandemic. We would never have gotten to the stage we're at now in terms of mass remote working had it not been for the pandemic. The corporate system would not have allowed it. There were too many bosses. And I hold my hands up here. I remember meeting someone after the pandemic, and she said, she used to be my PA. She's a really good friend. And she said, she went, "You always hated remote working." And I was like, "Yeah, I know I did. I wanted everyone in the office." I don't know why, but maybe it was a control thing. I'm not sure. So we've proven that people can work remotely, meaning that people have gotten used to that and don't necessarily want to come back to the office. So I think that's changed mindsets to what conventional work is about. The other, I think, is the massive advancements in technology, particularly generative AI, and what you can do with these tools and how quick and how much quicker you can go to market with things is extraordinary. So, you know, if I were about to maybe either think about going to university or if in my 20s, I would look at the world and think, I don't want to go to that drab building 5 days a week when I could be doing lots of other things. So I almost wonder whether, just in the spirit of the name of this podcast, I also think, you know, do we think now that the conventional way of working is what is weird and everything else is potentially normal? Because that seems to be the way that it's stacking up. You know, when I talk to young people, and they tell me what it is they want to do, I'm like, I don't even know what that is. I'm blown away, you know, by that. And I think they've looked at what we would have considered normal and gone, that's just weird, you know. Mm-hmm. And people have choices that they didn't have before because we've completely blown apart the model and what it could be capable of supporting. It just feels weird, doesn't it? To me, at least, anyway.
It does. So can you tell us about the beginning of your career journey? You mentioned earlier that you were in the corporate world. Could you explain what you did and then when you made the shift, the pivot out?
Sure. So my first job was as a graduate trainee at the Royal Bank of Scotland in their technology department. And I didn't know anything about technology. And it became very clear that that was no barrier to entry. And I had a very, very happy career doing that. And I still enjoy risk and risk management and how it can help an organization. But in the background, I'd always fed my creative heart by writing. And I was lucky enough to meet someone who I ended up writing 4 or 5 books with, and hopefully will write more. And one of them, when it was a short story, this is probably back in 2008, got nominated for quite a prestigious crime writing award. And it didn't win, but it did get us an agent and it did get us a book deal. And that I found absolutely fascinating. And I wanted to do something for me. And so I put myself through a screenwriting course. I did a master's in screenwriting, and I could start to see a point at which the office became something that I was, for a while at least, navigating away from, and the creative thing was becoming more and more important to me and was consuming much more of my time. I went to Los Angeles for 5 months, studied, came back at the end of 2016, and then started to really think about how could I do both the creative side and help corporate clients, either in a risk management perspective or in a how to be more creative perspective and how to embrace the power of storytelling.
So can you talk to us a bit about the genesis and intention behind Don't Quit?
Yes, thank you for that. You know Christian, he's been on the show. Christian and I were at the same organization together. We left that organization, I think, a couple of years apart. And we were having lunch once, and he said, look, can I just pick your brains about a few things? And I said, yeah, of course. And he said, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And I was like, yeah, you absolutely, that, those are all very valid things. Let me tell you what I did and the mistakes that I made, and why maybe my learnings can help you, you know, not make the mistakes and get to where you want to be a lot quicker. And we realized over several conversations a couple of things about the transition from full-time corporate life into freelancing. And the first is that we were both managing directors in an investment bank. And the first thing you realize is that when you're in an investment bank in that capacity, you, your diary's managed for you, your emails all get answered, your phone calls get answered immediately. You know, people want to help, they go out of their way to help, assuming they're not out of, they're going out of their way to try and block you. And, you know, let's leave the politics aside. That doesn't happen in the freelance world, because Mark Haywood, managing director, investment bank, great. Mark Haywood, freelancer, no one cares. You know, and that's the reality. No one cares. And what we discovered was that there is a skill set and a mind shift that is required as a freelancer that you don't naturally have when you're in-house. Because when you're in-house, you're part of this corporate structure, this weird corporate structure, which is very hierarchical, which is based absolutely on what job title you have. And that doesn't exist in the freelance world, because in the freelance world, you're everything. You know, you make the tea, you empty the bins, you fund, you're the funder, you're the investor, you're the CEO, you're absolutely everything. And that's really daunting if you don't know what that means. And so the genesis of Don't Quit was, what if there was an opportunity to put everything that Christian and I had learned in our move away from the corporate structure, full-time at least, into the freelance world, and help people who are potentially considering doing the same realize that maybe they're not yet ready for it. And maybe if you just develop certain skills and develop that cognitive pivot in-house while you're still getting paid, the entire transition will be a lot easier for you. And you'll be able to start to debunk certain myths, which is that you can't do it because you've got so much deferred bonus potential in the firm. You can't do it because you've got kids in school. You can't do it for whatever, you know, whatever reason. You can, you absolutely can. Those are obstacles, that they're not complete barriers. They're just obstacles, and you can navigate them, but it does take, you know, a mind shift. And when we started talking to people about, you know, we've got this idea and it's all about why, if you want to change your life, the last thing you should do is quit, essentially because you're not ready and you don't know what you don't know. And we can help you with all of that. The reaction was extraordinary, because it was people who you would have assumed were happy in the conventional world of work weren't, or were unsure, or were curious about what life might be like on the outside, starting to say, yeah, I'd be very interested in doing it. And a year or so ago, we went into a recording studio. We did we recorded for about 3 hours, of which we got, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of really good stuff that we could use on LinkedIn, started to tease things out there, started to build up an idea as to how we might help people who wanted to do the same things that we had done. And I just want to pause there, because this is really important, because this is like somebody coming to me and saying, how do I become a full-time writer or a full-time screenwriter or whatever? It's the same as being, how do I become a full-time freelancer? And what I say to them very often is, the best thing that can happen to you is that you wake up tomorrow and realize that this is not what you want to do. Because if you do want to do this, then you have to put up with the crap that goes with being a full-time freelancer or a full-time creative, which is people will change payment terms at the drop of a hat and you nothing you can do about it. People will withhold payment. People will ghost you completely for months on end and then expect you to jump to attention when they are ready to engage. And we could talk about this for hours. This could be a whole new podcast in its own right, you know, crap that freelancers have to put up with. So in a way, the best thing that happens to you is that you wake up and realize, I don't want to do that. But if you do, it's much harder than you think. It's much, much harder. However hard you think it is, double it and add 50%. It's mind-numbingly difficult at times. And if there was an opportunity for us through our learnings and our mistakes and our failings to help people ease that transition, it felt like the right thing to do. So that's what we are attempting to do with Don't Quit. We're going to run a webinar at the end of this month that shows people what the entire course structure would look like. And then we'll move to a more formal cohort later in the year, which will include, you know, experts on personal branding, personal resilience, coaching, mentoring, all of those things. And we're just trying to, I guess, package or bottle the stuff that we blindly stumbled through without necessarily realizing that we were doing the right thing. And we'll be very candid about the mistakes that we made, because I think I'm fascinated by entrepreneurs. And when I go and see entrepreneurs being interviewed, it drives me mad when they don't get asked about their mistakes and their failings. You know, what's the biggest failure you've ever had? That is the first question every entrepreneur should be asked, because that's the learning. You know, that's what we're there for. We're there to learn. Great that you sold 6 businesses and 5x'd your money. Congratulations. But I'm interested in the 15 projects that you screwed up before that, because that, I think, is where we can help. So that was the genesis, and that's what we're trying to do with the project.
That sounds amazing. I think it's really interesting, your point around you're a nobody when you leave. I think it actually speaks to some of the things we discussed around how much our identities are tied up in our jobs. So I'm curious, how did you rebuild your sense of self and professional identity once you left? And then what kinds of lessons will you be taking into the course based on that?
There's a couple, and it's a really good question. And I think it started before I left. And it was that if I could change my mind set and shift cognitively into thinking the creative side of things is really important to me right now, so I need to focus on that, and I need to then carve out time to go to the conventional world of work. And that's not to say that I was doing the side hustle from the office. I wasn't. I was very diligent. I worked as hard as I could, worked with some great people who I miss dearly. But it was the creative side of things is more important to me personally. So I'm going to focus on my cognitive energy on that and then shift into conventional work mode when I go to the office. That was very freeing. It's very difficult, but it was very freeing. And I think that that has helped enormously. And that's not to say, and I would and am entertaining, you know, opportunities to move back into the corporate world, knowing that the skills that I've acquired since I left it are now incredibly valuable in the conventional world of work, because the conventional world of work is looking to see what it can do to attract people who don't want to be in it. So it is looking to refresh. And I think the only people that can help with that are people that have lived through the sorts of things that I, you know, have lived through. But it's the exercise, Alice, in kind of working out what's important to you and who's shouting the loudest and, you know, who needs assistance more than anyone else. But I've never considered myself to be I'll make this up, but, you know, a technologist or a lawyer or whatever. I've never put myself in that bucket. There are things that I know how to do. There are things that I can do better than a lot of people. There are things I know I will never be able to do. And it doesn't matter to me what industry or sector or vertical that's in. I have the skill set. I know how valuable and how commercial that skill set can be. And that's sort of how I look at things is can I help? Because, you know, risk management, filmmaking, exactly the same. It's all about problem solving. It's all about things going wrong on set and the light not being in the right place. You know, risk management is all about, you know, managing the unexpected or understanding that there is risk in everything, understanding that risk management needs to be proportionate to the organization. We can't manage every risk. And I think that the most valuable thing that I did was look at my life as objectively as anyone is able to do about their own life and see there is this creative side, there is this corporate side, and actually there's a huge Venn diagram overlap in terms of creativity and the corporate world. It's just that many people don't see it. They don't necessarily understand that they can or could have the opportunity to be creative in a corporate environment, because traditionally that is frowned upon. Whereas I was just trying to be as authentic as I could, and that resonated with people. So I kept doing it. And I think that that's really important. And I'm not suggesting that people need to go out and be creative or do the things that I do. I have relatively few skills, and the skills that I do have are valuable. So it's about understanding how best to use them. And I wanted to share one thing that didn't come up in our discovery calls, but I was reminded of it first thing this morning, of something I said to someone once in an interview. And they said, "What, you talk to me about your ideal job or role." And I said, "I've never really thought about it like that. I look at the attributes of a role, that, or the attributes that a role needs to have in order for me to be interested in them." And this is much more in the corporate side of things. So when I worked in that environment, I would always think, okay, there has to be something broken. We have to be fixing something. I don't want to spin plates. I'm not interested in that. I'm not the right person for that. I'm not a steady state person. So it has to be broken. There has to be a fundamental problem that we are trying to fix. It has to be global. I have to be able to help all of it, not just one bit of it. And I have to have the opportunity to bring people in and help them grow and develop, and then take joy in the fact that they then move on to things that they want to go and do. The sector then didn't matter. The industry didn't matter. The pay, it would be easy for me to say the pay didn't matter, but it did. But it's the attributes of the role. What are we trying to do here? And now, as a freelancer sat here right now, the opportunity to be curious and to experience things that you wouldn't necessarily experience, there is so much learning in that, that it could not fail to make you a more rounded professional in the conventional world of work. It's just that there is so little time for that. So if you shift your mindset to thinking, well, how do I carve out the time to be curious? I once hosted a client dinner for a client who wanted us to speak on the subject of orchestration and teamwork. And they held it at a multi-Michelin star restaurant. And I pitched this idea, which they didn't go with, which is a shame because I think it would have been brilliant. But my idea was, could I interview the restaurant manager just before a plate of food was put down and get the restaurant manager to explain how many individual processes had been involved in the creation of this dish? How many people did it take to orchestrate this dish, this plate of food that is now sat in front of you in this 3-Michelin-star restaurant? How many bits or moving parts are there in this one plate of food? And they loved the idea. They just didn't go with it. And we didn't have the time. And I think, you know, these are the sorts of things that we're going to be talking about in Don't Quit. Is a lot of it is just a cognitive pivot. If you look at businesses that were very successful in pivoting in COVID, you can't pivot overnight. That is a cognitive mindset that you have built up prior to that. It doesn't happen in the moment. It has to have been generated over months, if not years, because you have been creative, you have been problem solving. Therefore, when another problem in the form of COVID comes about, you are able to pivot. And so few organizations, unfortunately, didn't have that cognitive flexibility, and so weren't able to do it. And I think that if there's anything that's important more than anything else at the moment, it's probably cognitive flexibility. I think that is key to any transition. And by the way, you can transition out of the conventional world of work into the freelance world, and you can absolutely go back. That's not to say it's a once and done. You can 100% go back, and I think you'd be a much more rounded professional for it as well.
That's going to be really interesting topic coming forward, because Alice has said, "I'm unemployable," because she's been a freelancer for so long. You just mentioned that you were even potentially exploring some in-house opportunities. Is that right, Mark? That would you go back into the corporate world or in full-time employment world?
Yeah, 100% I would, because I think that I would be actually more well-rounded. And I never left it. I still do it from a subject matter perspective. But if the opportunity of a role came along that ticked those boxes, I would absolutely consider it, because that's the joy of life, really, is you challenge yourself. And it doesn't mean that you can't continue to do, certain things. You can if you want to. But yeah, I never thought it was a once and done exercise, because I think there's something quite sad in that you're saying, right, this is it now. This is the nothing else is going to sort of change, or no more interesting opportunities are going to arise for me. And I think that, that again is a cognitive mind shift that people who are thinking of transitioning to be freelance, they need to know it doesn't have to be forever. You can move around. That is, I just share this one anecdote with you. I know a guy who one of his hobbies was flamenco dancing. And there was one time he didn't go to class because he was at his photography class. And there was outrage that you can't have two hobbies. That's outrage. The world will allow you one hobby, but not two. It's like the world will allow you one shift, either from one industry to another or from one form of work to another, but not two. Well, that isn't true. If you have enough cognitive flexibility to understand that you can pivot one way, you must therefore have enough flexibility to know that you can pivot a third way or back or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I think to some extent we are victims of our generation, right? So as we've discussed before, we have parents who were expected to stay at one organization. You pick your company, you stay at throughout your career, and that was sort of end game for them. You then had our generation where the expectation was that we would have multiple jobs, right? So we'd stay at a job for 5 years or 3 years and we'd move around. And now we're looking at a generation coming into the workforce that is expected to have multiple careers over the course of their lives, right? So completely different thing. And yet, and we've had this discussion several times with other guests, but I'd be really interested to get your take on it. We have not radically changed education to provide young people with the skills they'll need to be able to pivot over and over again in the workforce. And so knowing what you know and the people that you're speaking to now about the later life decision to enter into the freelance world, what would you like to see happening in secondary education that would help young people to have these skills coming into the workforce from the start?
Wow. I'm in no way an educator, but I do think about this a lot. There is a young woman who I have tried to help for many years. 2020, I was asked to be a judge on a comedy competition for 11 to 18 year olds, which I did. And the very first video I watched filled me with joy because it was so funny. It was so brave. There were no words in it. It was just this young woman who created this character having the time of her life. And I thought it was really funny. And she'd submitted, I don't know, five or six different videos, and none of them won, sadly, in any, there were different categories, best solo performance, best sketch, best whatever. And I responded to something on social media where one of the judges said, could we have a big shout out for this individual who didn't win, but thought she was great. And I echoed that. And her mum got in touch and said, look, we're trying to help her. Would you be willing to help us? And I was like, sure. And at the time she was 11, she's now 16, 17, whatever she is. And she came to do work experience with me recently and her mum. And it was just joyous to see someone who might actually want to work in the arts, which is a terrible industry, to not give her some time and to not give her the opportunity to make an informed decision would have been the wrong thing to do. So, of course, we'll try and help as best we can. I don't think we show kids what could be done or what could be achieved. We only show them what the system says we should aspire to. And the system doesn't support, the system supports work is weird. It supports the conventional structure of work, and we are moving increasingly away from that. And I think we need to shine a light on that. And I think we need to show children what they could do. Mm. You know, I particularly, Dan, we talked about this earlier. My wife and I are big fans of the WSL and go to a lot of women's football games. There is something really amazing about that. The atmosphere is different. It's much more family oriented. And I love the fact that we are normalizing young boys watching grown women play elite sport. That is such a powerful, heartwarming thing to observe, because those children are growing up to think this is normal. Mm-hmm. Whereas we didn't. Like, I remember the school that I went to, even in sport, you could do these sports, but not these sports. You know, you could, boys weren't allowed to play hockey. Boys did cricket, football and rugby. And we were quite lucky in that sense because it was quite a sporty school. Girls did hockey and netball and gymnastics. Well, where are the opportunities for people who want to be, you know, the new Ella Toon or Alicia Russo? How are we helping those girls achieve what they want? Now it's completely changed. You know, the Lionesses win the Euros and all of a sudden everyone loves women's football, you know, and you think, well, that is good that everyone loves women's football and they should. But when I see young boys watch grown women play elite sport at both the cricket and the football, you go, yes, this isn't all going to hell in a handcart. We might actually be able to normalize something here. And that I think is great. Now, sadly, I think the system currently supports the conventional way of work, and that probably needs to change.
Well, it sounds like your program will certainly help adults to achieve that and to make up for some of those skills they might not have gained through education. So really looking forward to seeing how that progresses and what comes out of that moving forward. How can people get in touch with you if they want to reach you?
So I'm on LinkedIn, obviously, and there is some stuff on the recent posts of LinkedIn about the Don't Quit webinar. My most recent repost will include a link to the webinar if you want to sign up for that. And I should just say, and this is really important, if you want to sign up, you don't have to attend if you are uncomfortable about who else may be on that call, because you may not want people to know that you are considering this transition. Don't worry about that. You can sign up and then just watch the replay, but you have to sign up in order to get the link to the replay. But we've had many people say to us, do I have to attend because I'm nervous? And we've been like, no, 100% you don't. Just watch the replay if that's what you want to do. And then we'll do a 30-minute consultation with you afterwards. So yeah, just search for me on LinkedIn and you'll be able to find out information about Don't Quit from there.
Fantastic. Great. Thanks so much. And thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks.
And thank you to everyone for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have any Work is Weird moments to share, please find us on LinkedIn and let us know what they were. In the meantime, have a wonderfully weird week, and we look forward to seeing you next time.